This is Techno Destructo, subtly controlling your mind through Toilet of Hell.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Toilet of Hell listeners, we have a very, very special guest with us coming all the way from Scumdogia or somewhere about past Uranus. We have the one and only Techno Destructo. How's it going, Techno?
The gravity of this planet affects my codpiece in such a way that is very uncomfortable, but I'm bearing with it for now.
We're so glad that you could join us today. You've done so many cool things in your career that we're just dying to hear about it. I guess one of the most recent things that you've done, though, is your own hot sauce. How did that happen? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but I'll tell you one thing for sure, is that Techno Destructo Garlic Death Grip Hot Sauce is a real thing. It exists. It's an actual hot sauce. You can put it on your food if you like and eat it. And to most human beings that I know who have tasted it, it seems to be pretty good. But me personally, I like to apply it to wooden steaks because Techno Destructo hot sauce is guaranteed to kill vampires or your money back.
That seems like a hell of a promise. It is, of course, available from Hella Hot Hot Sauce. If you're willing to, yeah, to
correct.
Take that plunge.
I'm glad you added that.
So Techno, you've been, I mean, you were one of the founders of GWAR. You kind of created so many of these original designs. How did this all start? How did you become the man behind the visual design?
Well, I think you want to talk to Hunter Jackson to address those questions. And so I'll change into him. He's sort of my alter ego and helps me disguise myself so that I can move amongst normal human beings without being detected. So, yeah, I'm Hunter Jackson. I'm one of the original creators of GWAR. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, where GWAR actually started. And sort of the way that it started was I was working as a prison guard at the time, and I wanted to make movies and stuff. I really hated Star Wars because I thought it was a really shitty representation of what science fiction movie could be. And one of the main things I hated about Star Wars was the music. I wanted to see Road Warrior in outer space with like a punk rock soundtrack. So that's the kind of movie that I wanted to make. And I started making props and costumes for it. And I rented a studio space in a big warehouse building. And that's where I met Dave Brocky, who was heading up this punk rock band at the time. And he and I collaborated on some weird theatrical effects for his show and stuff like that. And thus GWAR was born. Like his punk rock band had a head-on collision with my movie. And GWAR was the result. And that's how it all got started. And then I did GWAR for like a really long time, like 15 years. And I did a lot. I'd like develop a club. And it was in the days of VHS tape, you know. So like I like was making all these bootleg videos of GWAR. And it was before the internet, you know. So the only way you could get a hold, you know, see GWAR was by getting a hold of a bootleg videotape. And I used to like to work conventions, comic book and science fiction and horror conventions and stuff. And that way I could bring GWAR to an audience that, you know, might not go and see us at the shitty dives we usually played at. And but fans that I knew would be into what we were doing, you know. And me and this executioner especially would go to these conventions and stomp around in costume and get in trouble and stuff. And it was really fun. And then I also did a lot of GWAR comic books and stuff. As doing the fan club, I started like at this fan club newsletter called Mind Control Monthly, which was meant to like grab a hold of people's minds and make them think only about GWAR. And it was a good way to educate the fans, you know, about there was more to GWAR than just the music, that there was this whole universe of crazy, weird characters and movies and videos and stuff like that. And so I did that for a while, and I split from them. And since I split from them, I've been doing playing the same character, Techno Destructo, and doing professional wrestling and stuff like that.
Now that is really interesting because it feels so natural that GWAR and professional wrestling meet in the middle with some kind of sweet spot. There's, you know, outlandish storylines. There's, you know, cool costumes and lots of violence. When did you discover your love for wrestling?
Well, I was always into wrestling, you know, since I was in high school and stuff. Although back then, there were two distinct schools of wrestling. There was what we used to term as that fake Hulk Hogan bullshit. And then there was the real redneck wrestling, you know, with Dusty Rhodes and the Four Horsemen and stuff like that. And that was back in the day, man, where I was so bored with WWE that I never watched it for very long before I, you know. And when WWE would be on at the same time as the redneck wrestling to try to put them out of business, I never bothered to watch WWE because I knew it would fall short compared to how awesome the real shit was, you know. And me and my friends, like Sexecutioner, like the slave pit where we built all the guar stuff was pretty close to the Coliseum where they would have the wrestling events. And we could actually walk there from the slave pit, which was super dangerous because that meant that we could get drunk enough because we didn't have to drive. So, like, we would get super sloshed and then go to the wrestling show. And then we're all so drunk we don't know any better than to buy more $5 a cup beers until we scream and yell. And my girlfriend at the time made us these awesome shirts because my favorite wrestler was Ivan Koloff, who was he had a 3-man Russian tag team that was just so awesome. They would always fight the Rock and Roll Express, and their matches were usually – they would pummel the Rock and Roll Express for the whole match, and then the Rock and Roll Express would win through some fluke in the end, you know. But me and my friends all had these awesome red T-shirts with a big hammer and sickle that my girlfriend had made for us all.
Ivan Koloff, the Russian Bear, for those that
don't
know.
Yeah. Yeah, he was awesome. He was really short, and he had these long, huge arms that hung all the way down to his knees. And he had a super muscle-bound quote-unquote nephew who turned out to be his actual nephew, which really surprised me. I got to meet him a couple of times, and you know, when I was doing GWAR, I met him for the first time, and he actually asked me to come and train at his school and become a professional wrestler. And I was like, nah, I could never do that. I'm not big enough to be a professional wrestler, you know. But little did I know, here I at the age of fucking 50, I like actually do start kind of a weird professional wrestling career.
That is inspirational. You know, back in the day, I guess they still do it occasionally, but it seems like wrestling storylines then focus on having the big strong American beat up on the Red Menace, which. GWAR kind of flipped the script on that quite a bit with things like America Must Be Destroyed. Was that in part a reaction to the, I guess, the Red Scare at the time?
No, not really. I mean, it sort of came later on. It was more about America Must Be Destroyed was more about censorship. And our enemies in that sort of plot line, I guess, were Edna Granbo, who's another character I played. Edna Granbo, leader of the Morality Squad. So I played her, too. And she's like this little old lady in a wheelchair that her wheelchair would transform into this crazy monster with these buzzsaw hands, you know. And she had her grandson was the all-American superhero, this big muscle-bound dude that would come out on stage and fight GWAR and stuff like that. In fact, the whole Phallus and Wonderland video was about GWAR's battle with censorship and the Morality Squad and stuff like that. So that's what that was about. But earlier on, we did have some GWAR shows where the first opening part would be, there was a part with a Russian soldier and an American soldier, and they're meeting on the border in Alaska or some imaginary weird place where America and Russia has an actual border. And they both have these giant nuclear warheads on their shoulders that they're marching around with instead of guns, you know? And they have this conversation, and they decide to shake hands and make friends, and then GWAR bursts on the scene and kills both of them. You know? And that's how the show started.
Where did the character of Techno Destructo come from?
Well, he was just sort of like he was a character from the science fiction movie that I had been working on. And just like some of the villains, like Cardinal Sin is like this giant holy warrior robot from outer space that comes to Earth to judge, you know, and finds us all to be sinners, and so the Earth must be cleansed, you know. And then Gwar turns out to be the defenders of Earth against this holy warrior from outer space, which is a weird position for them to be in. But so some of the characters, a lot of the characters and a lot of the sort of science fiction background are sort of evolutions of the original plot line of the science fiction movie that we were working on. But, you know, Gwar is a big group with a lot of people in it. So when we would come up with ideas and stuff, we would brainstorm, you know, and so things get twisted and combined and evolve. Ideas evolve and change. So, you know, what ended up happening with Gwar was way different from the original concept of my goofy movie, but it's similar in a lot of ways. Rendezvous with Ragnarok, I think, is my favorite video that we did, because that one is the closest to the original, like, science fiction movie stuff.
You mean your favorite video wasn't fucking an animal?
No, you know, and that one came out more towards the line time period when I was starting to sort of sour on Gwar in a way. And I felt like it was really weird that, because we were trying to push ourselves into an area where Gwar could, and Slave Pit could sort of be a legitimate business, you know, and we wanted to get out there where people could see us be more marketable to a larger audience. And then as a group, we voted on let's put all of our backing behind this song that you can't even say the name of it on the radio, you know? And I felt like that was sort of, we were always shooting ourselves in the foot like that, kind of.
At its peak, when you were creating these designs, how many people did you have working with you creating these artwork together in the Slave Pit?
Well, it's kind of changed, you know, because people would work on it for a while and then get discouraged and move on. And then new people would be recruited into the group, you know. And like, for instance, at the point where I left Gwar, Dave Brockie and me were the only two original people left, you know. And now, since it's been 15 years or so since I left, there's, I would say, more than half of the people involved in it now I've never met, you know. So it's an evolving thing. And me personally, I foresee that Gwar will go on forever. You know, I don't see any reason why it would ever really have to stop.
How does that feel for you, seeing that something you helped create is just moving and evolving beyond?
Well, it's okay with me. I don't really object to it as long as I'm free to do what I want to. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of part of the reason why I had to split with them, because I really it got so political. Everything got so political and everything and, you know, voting on stuff. And you know, when I first named the company the Slave Pit, it was because I was a slave to my art, you know, and I'm willing to work as hard as a slave to make that happen. And I sort of, in deep down, I kind of expect to end up making about as much money as a slave too, you know? So that's what Slave Pit means to me. But then it started to mean people putting chains on me and keeping me from doing what I wanted to do, you know, for good or bad. You know, every decision and every leadership decision that I made in Slave Pit was definitely not a good one. You know, I didn't bat 1,000 on that. But at the same time, I mean, we got a lot of shit done, you know.
I've seen early videos of Gwar where some of the characters are wearing like hockey helmets and football pads.
Yeah. In fact, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because we almost forgot to talk about that. Right now at the art gallery next door to the Burgundy Room, I'm having an art exhibit that shows a lot of those early flyers and a lot of the other art, Gwar artwork that I did. I mean, like I said, in the evolution of Guar over its like something like 30 year history now, there were a lot of different artists that contributed and did different things for it. But this particular art show next door to the Burgundy Room in Hollywood is it's all my work. There's like 45 pieces in it, and it's got like logo designs. It's got some storyboards. It's got comic book pages and all different kinds of stuff. And one of the things that people are the most interested in is the first two flyers ever that are on display. They're huge, too. Originally, we drew them like they're pretty big. They're like about 18 by 24. And then we reduced them down. But one of them I did with Chuck Varga inked it, and the other one, Dave Brocky inked it. And they do have the hockey helmeted characters in it. They have the ball sack is there, but he was played by another guy, Chris Popst, who actually came up with the name ball sack because it's named after this. A lot of people probably don't know this, although a lot of people do. Balzac is actually sort of a pun because there's a really famous French poet that wrote really romantic, flowery poetry, and his name was Balzac. With a Z. And so that's where Chris Popes is quite the intellectual, and he was the one who thought that was funny to name him Balzac.
So at this art show, are you just getting Guar fans, or are you getting like highfalutin art types that like look at it with monocles and enjoy wine and cheese parties?
Well, since it's right next door to the Burgundy Room, it's pretty cool because there's a lot of foot traffic down there. And there's a lot of Guar fans that didn't know the show was going on. Like the opening night, I tried my best to sort of advertise it as best I could. And I've still been promoting it on Facebook, posting lots of pictures on the Hunter Jackson and the Techno Destructo pages. But the surprising thing to me, and in fact, one of the funnest things about the show to me, is the number of people that just happen to be walking by and look in and see, oh my God, that's Guar. You know, see the big logo or something. Oh my God, is that Guar? Plus, I've been running around there in costume as much as possible with a lot of my space dominatrix girlfriends and stuff. And I was played Scrotamoon for a while, who is this big giant dude with huge hands and feet. And I was doing both him and Techno Destructo on roller skates, skating around in the art gallery and skating around outside to try to get people to come in and stuff. So it's been really fun. And I've met a lot of people who had never heard of Guar before that just came in because, oh my God, look at all these weirdos running around with no clothes on. Let's go check it out.
Do you ever, like, just go to the supermarket dressed as Scrotamoon?
No, I never do. Although I have stomped around on Halloween. One Halloween when my son was about 6 or 7 or 8, probably 7. But we went out for Halloween and he was Buzz Lightyear. It must have been 6 because he was totally into Buzz Lightyear. He was Buzz Lightyear and I was Scrotamoon. And we had this big chain around my neck. And he was like Buzz Lightyear had just captured Scrotamoon, and we went around trick or treating, which was super fun. We had a really good time. The next year I went, he was like a stormtrooper, and I went as Darth Maul. I shaved my head and painted my head like Darth Maul, and it was really funny. But when you see the pictures, I'm always smiling way bigger than he is. You know? But he just turned 18. And I just started working out at the gym with him. So look out, universe.
That's fantastic. So how did the idea for these big, grotesque prostheses come about in the band?
Well, I wanted to make things big and over the top so that people, even on the last row of the audience, could see it and appreciate it. That's why everything is huge. You know, and all the weapons are gigantic. And when we hit each other, we don't really have to act because we actually are knocking each other around. You know? And you can use a lot of, we had certain weapons that were crowd control weapons. You know, when people get up on stage and get too out of control, we can wham them back into the audience with like a giant foam rubber club or something like that, or a big hammer, you know. And there are plenty, as me as Techno Destructo, there are plenty of times when the audience wants to help Guar out, you know, help Guar kill Techno Destructo. There was one time I remember all my armor was stripped off of me, and I somehow got off the stage, and I was on my laying flat on my back on the floor, and I look up to see some audience member who had somehow gotten this huge two-handed sword, and they were straddling me with one foot on either side of my chest, and they just lifted that sword up with both hands and just slammed right down on my head, you know. And fortunately, I managed to move my head just in time, so I only ended up with a big mouse on the side of my head, you know, under my eye. But man, that guy was going to crack my head right open, you know. But, you know, that same person is the kind of person. There have been times where people fuck with me in the show, you know, and I'll go, oh man, I'm going to kill that asshole, you know, and I would go running out in the audience to beat this guy's ass. And then as soon as I find him, he sees me and falls down on his knees and just goes, oh my God, that was the greatest show I ever saw. I had so much fun. You guys are the awesomest, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that pretty much makes, you know, puts a damper on my ass kicking attitude, you know. How can you be mad at somebody like that? But that's happened. That's definitely happened more than once.
I guess I wanted to turn towards some of the songs that you were actually involved with. Like, you did the vocals for The Private Pain of Techno Destructo. Was that something that you always wanted to do, or were the other guys pushing for you to do your own songs?
Well, I'd done the first version. I'd done it before Hello. So I played Techno Destructo for a really long time and written the original Techno Destructo song. And then some weird situation came up that Don Draculich, that plays Sleazy, took over the character of Techno Destructo briefly. And it was sort of like, Hunter, we all decided that Don is going to be Techno Destructo from now on. And so that was why, and he recorded the album. He recorded my song on the first album. So, and rewrote all the lyrics and everything, pretty much. And then, so after that, we went on tour and we did this shtick where there were two Techno Destructos, because there was a big schism within the group where half the people were like, hey, come on, this is Hunter's character. He developed him. He should be able to play him. And then half the people were like, no, Don should be the new Techno Destructo. We all decided. So we went on tour with this big competition. So one of us would come out and, you know, start killing Guar. And then halfway through, there would be a big interruption. And the other one would come out and go, I don't know who the fuck you think you are, but I'm the real Techno Destructo, and I reserve the right to destroy Guar. And then we would fight each other, right? So for that whole tour, it was like this intense competition for us to see who was going to be the real Techno, who was going to end up being Techno Destructo. And of course, nobody could match the intensity and anger and angst that I bring to the role. So ultimately, I did win out. But for a while, we would bring Bozo Destructo. He became Bozo Destructo, and I became Techno Destructo. And a lot of times we would do tag team things. That's where I had my first quote unquote real wrestling matches was. When we would do the way we started doing wrestling shows in Guar is we would create all these new characters for a new album cycle, right? And then we would perform as those characters, all do a big loop across the country. Then as soon as that tour was over, not too many months away, we would want to do another loop of the country, but we would want to do a new show, but we would just have spent all this money building all these new characters. So we're like, hey, let's just take all these characters and write them into a wrestling show, you know, and then we would do that. And we would paint a big backdrop behind the band. There would be a big crowd of crazy people watching the show, sort of like if the stage was on a wrestling ring in the middle of a big crowd, you know what I mean? And we would, during the wrestling matches, we would just put a ropes across the front of the stage, you know?
Very cool. What was the coolest effect that you feel like you designed during your tenure?
I think Scrotum Moon was the awesomest, rockin'est character ever in the history of GWAR. And I don't think they've come up with anybody that can beat him since. Because his story was sort of like a peer pressure story, where we had lost this executioner, but we needed a new bodyguard for the band. So we could have somebody that could fight monsters while Odorous was singing. So we decided to do Scrotum Moon, who was going to be like this sort of a withered kind of a character, that he comes out and he wants to be GWAR's bodyguard, but he has to prove that he's cool enough to hang out with GWAR. So he does all these, starts doing all these crazy bong hits, the nitro burning funny bong and all that. And then he's drinking all this Jägermeister, and the Jägermeister comes out. But what ends up happening is he gets so fucked up trying to convince GWAR that he's cool enough to hang out with them. But then this monster comes out and bites his arms and legs off because he's too fucked up to fight back. And then he comes out in the end of the show. Slum Instra has him on this Frankenstein table, and she sews these giant arms and legs on him. So he gets up off of that and fights Cardinal Sin or the Master or whoever it was, you know, depending on the show. So he was a pretty dynamic character because he could do a lot of cool stuff, and he was pretty awesome. So he was my favorite.
Awesome.
And Grambo was pretty cool too, because Grambo's costume was like a I was like sort of inside the wheelchair, and she had big four-wheel drive wheelchair with tractor tire wheels, you know, that could run over people, you know, and so I'm actually sort of like this big wheelchair costume with like a little old lady puppet strapped to my chest in a way, and my head is inside of her head so I can sing and, you know, talk like her and stuff, but my whole body is inside of the wheelchair. So at one point, first she can run over people with the wheels, and then she kicks the wheels off. And she has these buzz saws underneath. And the cool thing about the buzz saws were they had like a, I came up with this paddle wheel system where the blood shoots out and hits this paddle wheel and makes the saws turn. And at the same time, whatever I'm pointed at gets drenched with blood. So the paddle wheels are turning and the blood is squirting. And it's pretty graphic. It looks pretty cool.
When did the blood first come into play? Or not just blood, I guess, but fluids?
Well, in the very, very, very early shows, before I was involved on stage, I would be in the audience, and I would have like a dishwashing liquid bottle full of fake blood, and I would just squirt it. I would be there on the second row of the audience, and I would just squirt it on people on stage, and nobody knew where it was coming from, you know, even though I was sitting right beside them. They were all looking towards the stage, and all of a sudden blood is all over everything, and they could figure out where it was coming from, which was a cool effect and really simple. But we also used blood bags a lot too. And like the first blood mace that I built had a one spike of the mace is built so that it's full of fake blood bags. And then you smash the person in the head. You show the audience all the spikes. And then you hit the guy in the head with the fake one, and blood goes everywhere. And we did that for years with Danielle, and it to great effect. And you know, nowadays in wrestling, I do a similar thing where I'll have my dominatrix hand sneak me blood bags from ringside, and then my opponent will throw me against the ropes, and I'll pop the blood bag so the blood squirts up in the air, and into the first row of the audience. And it's not a whole lot, but it doesn't need to be a lot. As long as everybody just sees that eruption, that squirt, you know, up in the air, and then you get some on the first couple of people so they scream, you know, that's all that really matters. And plus in wrestling, like I was fighting against this guy called Cereal Man for a while, who's like a superhero with a cereal box on his head. Look it up online. Go to YouTube and look up Techno Destructo versus Serial Man. There's a bunch of good matches on YouTube that I edited together and posted. But we were doing this thing called the Blood Bath for a Balanced Breakfast.
That's awesome.
they were really gory, and I would pop tons of blood bags, and he would just beat the fuck out of me. And by the end of the ring, by the end of the match, the ring is just covered with this blood mix, and it's so slippery and all. And then afterwards, I usually do a part of the show is my valet makes me clean up. You know, she comes out, and whether I win or lose, she's pissed and kicks my ass and makes me clean up. And so, but even with me cleaning up and spending a lot of time trying to scrub the ring after my matches and stuff, it was just too much of a mess. And it makes the ring slippery for the other acts that happen after me, which is a real no-no. So
I saw a clip of one of your matches against him. Did he body slam you on a bunch of cereal?
Yeah, that's part of the gag, because in hardcore wrestling, one of the things that's really popular for the wrestlers to do is they'll bring out a paper bag, and then they'll dump thumbtacks all over the ring, right, in the middle. So Cereal Man, he takes out the bag of cereal from the box and dumps cereal in the middle of the ring, and then he'll suplex somebody into it, you know, or he'll take the bag of cereal out of the cereal, you know, and put it in his pants, and then he'll jump off the top, rope and body slam somebody, and the bag will pop and cereal goes everywhere. He does a lot of shows for Hood Slam up in Oakland. And, you know, one of the cool things about wrestling is, what I've been trying to do with wrestling is sort of bring what I brought to GWAR to the professional wrestling world, you know, but it's ripe for it right now, because there's lots of small independent wrestling leagues that are doing really cool over the top shows. And Hood Slam is one of them. In fact, National Geographic did a story about them recently. And Lucha Vavoom is another one. That one's more lucha style wrestling, but that one has a lucha match and then a stripper. It's more like a burlesque. It's like a heavy on the costumery burlesque act, but it does get all the way down to nakedity, full on nakedity. So,
I'd go see that, definitely.
It is. Yeah, it's a cool show. It's a cool show. Like one of the acts that stuck out in my mind was these two girls that were dressed up like, one of them was dressed up like Catwoman, and the other one was dressed up like Batgirl, and they had flashlights, so the place was dark, and they're performing in a wrestling ring as well. The place was dark, but they had these flashlights, and they were pretending like they couldn't find each other in the dark. You know, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool the way they did it. But they do a lot of cool arty stuff there, so I would recommend that show. That show's good. And of course, Freak Show Wrestling, where I actually got to really do a lot of cool stuff. That's going on mostly in Las Vegas. But the cool thing about Freak Show Wrestling is that Sin Bodhi, who runs that show, is a former WWE guy, and WWE was called Kazarni.
Yep, and he had I remember him.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it was in a really dead time in wrestling, and then they did a bunch of promos about him, and I was like, a carnival dude, finally something interesting, somebody besides a fucking muscle-bound dude with Speedos on, you know, finally something interesting, you know. And then that he came out for like a couple of matches and they canned it. But, you know, it was because he got wrapped up into some political McMahon bullshit. It wasn't because of his wrestling ability, that's for damn sure. And he started doing Freak Show performing and stuff like that. And so Freak Show Wrestling will have cool stuff like two magicians doing magic tricks at each other, you know, and different weird stuff like that. And actually, Sin Bodhi, I was on Guinness Book of World Records with Sin Bodhi. Look up, go to Guinness Book of World Records, Extreme, whatever the TV show was, and look up Human Cutting Board, Human Cutting Board. So what we did was, I like get a call from Guinness Book of World Records going, hey, your buddy Sin Bodhi told us, you know, that we should call you. He wants you to be on the show with him, you know? And I'm like, sure, okay. What does he want me to do? Well, he wants to take a samurai sword and chop watermelons in half off your belly. And I was like, okay. So we did this thing where I was like, well, how many? So the store, as I was finding out what he wanted to do, well, you know, how many watermelons does he need to chop to get through the record, or how does this work? You know, so it turns out it's the most watermelons that you can chop in half in 60 seconds. So they timed it. So we had this girl, Mindy May, who was a really cool scream queen. She was doing it with him too. So she and I put the watermelon on my stomach, and then he's got to chop the watermelon in half and not cut me. This is a real samurai sword. It's really sharp. But you know, the only reason I let him do it is because I know Sinbodhi really well. And I know that if he was to hurt me, it would just guilt trip him so bad, because the reason his father was a super incredible martial artist. Right. And he started to become a martial artist himself, but he couldn't deal with the fact that in order for him to win the match, he's got to hurt somebody, you know, and sometimes hurt him really bad. And sometimes by accident, they can get hurt really, really, really bad, you know? And so that's kind of like not fun. So it sort of got to him, and that's why he decided to go into professional wrestling instead, because that way he could still fight and stunt fight. And, you know, he's always been into comic books and crap just like me. So he, you know, a lot of professional wrestlers are that way, because it's sort of like being a superhero. In fact, I totally consider myself a superhero, but I mean, a supervillain, I guess. But, and that's fun. You know, it's cool. It's fun to be able to say, hey, I'm a supervillain, and mean it. And it's true. You know, that's kind of fun. But, you know, I did this watermelon thing with Sinbodhi, and he was chopping. Look that one up, because it's pretty funny. And he chops these watermelons, and I don't think we quite made it. But I was pissed, because I was hoping I would get a scar out of it. You know, the next day, my stomach looked all red striped, but it went away in like a couple of days. I was like, come on, dude, if you're going to do this, I better at least get a scar out of it. You know, but he didn't cut me at all.
So do you get to chop anything off his stomach now?
No. I wouldn't. I don't think that would be too good of an idea. I'm not such an expert with the cutlery as he is.
Do you have any advice for young artists out there that are looking to kind of maybe not do exactly what you do, but kind of go off and do monsters or do stuff with latex or blood or anything weird like that?
Just go for it. And, you know, I did go to art school and stuff. I went to school for commercial art, but my teachers didn't do anything but tell me not to do what I do, you know. And all along the way, people have always told me that I can't, that it won't work, that, you know, nobody wants to see that shit, you know. But I've always had this attitude like, oh, yeah, well, I know I'm not a unique person. I know that there are other people out there that are into the same weirdo shit that I am, you know, and that's who I'm doing it for, you know. And plus, I'm doing it because I'm compelled to do it from deep inside. So if you stand up for what you believe in, you know, and just keep beating your head against that brick wall, and hopefully eventually it'll fall down before you beat your brains out.
I think that's great advice. I can't imagine art school is at least the way that I imagine it, as being especially welcoming for the guy that wants to, you know, make weirdo sci-fi violent movies.
Yeah, because there's a million out there. You know, if you go in art school, that's the first thing. Oh, not this again. Another comic book guy. You know, oh, another guy that wants to do yawn science fiction movies, you know, like that. So it's definitely not a very welcoming environment. Plus, I like to illustrate. I'm an illustrator too. And, you know, oh, we want you to do more typography and graphic design, you know, like that. So I definitely clashed. I was square peg, you know, trying to be hammered into the round hole all the way, you know. So don't lose your edges.
Well, does it feel gratifying that you've been able to, you know, stake your own path and do all the weirdo shit that you wanted to do all these years, despite what they said?
Well, I can't say that because there's still more to be done. So I'm not satisfied yet. I still have certain things on my to-do list, but I don't want to talk about them because they'll be in the next war show. But there's more crazy. Keep watching. There's going to be more crazy shit, and this is just the beginning because I'm just starting to get into a position where I can, make art. I have scratched up enough money and I can actually do shit, you know.
That's fantastic. Well, is there a place that folks can follow you on the internet where they can stay up to date with everything that that you're doing?
Yeah, I have a Facebook page, Hunter Jackson, and I have a Techno Destructo Facebook page as well. So check those out. Make sure and check out Hella Hot Sauce because he actually is going through the steps to market it and get it in grocery stores, you know, so you never know. And I'm hoping to do, speaking of wrestling and stuff, Shelly Martinez, possibly the hottest female wrestler who could actually take a bump and actually kick ass in the ring, I must add. She's the hottest one ever. And she lives here in L.A., and I met her through Freak Show Wrestling, and I was just talking to her recently about the possibility of doing a Hella Hot Sauce Garlic Death Grip commercial.
That's awesome. Jordan, weren't you gushing about her on our last episode?
I was. We were talking to Kevin Gill, who does commentary for Insane Clown Posse's Championship Wrestling, and he does Triple A and all that. And on his podcast, he's had Shelly on a number of times, and I've actually met her and had a nice conversation with her, and she is my, you know, wrestling crush as well. So it's all coming together. Eventually, we have to get her on the show, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah, she's the coolest, man. I really like hanging out with her. When I first really bonded with her was we were doing this Freak Show Wrestling photo shoot where it was supposed to be like the Last Supper, and Sin Bodhi wanted all the characters all around him, and she was there, and we went off and were smoking and stuff, and she was talking to me about how she had been abducted by aliens and stuff, and I was like, really? Me too! You know, so we definitely had a bonding experience, and we're talking about all of our adventures and stuff like that. It was really fun. She's a cool person. I really like her, and I can't wait to work with her on this upcoming Garlic Death Grip commercial, because I'm hoping that we can get her in some kind of really cool, like, half Elvira, half Vampirella outfit, you know, and be kicking Techno Destructo's ass all over the place. It'll be really fun. Come check out the art show this Friday on the 6th of October. Is going to be the final big party. I've been down there dressed up in costume, posing with pictures with people and stuff, roller skating around, acting all crazy. And I've had a steady flow of super awesome girls that have been putting on my costumes and posing for pictures as well. So come check that out. And because tonight, Friday is going to be the last night. We're going to take it down. Actually, Saturday's the last night, but that's not going to be a big party. But we are taking it down, and this stuff is going to go into some secret vault somewhere deep, deep, deep under North Korea, and you might never see it again. So come and buy some of this cool art, because any of the art that you buy will go to making more weird, crazy stuff.
Thank you so much, Techno Destructo / Hunter Jackson, for joining us for this show. And I was stoked to hear these stories from you, man.
Well, thanks for allowing me to spread the word. Keep standing up for the sick fun that you crave, because there's always somebody out there trying to take it away from you.
Slave of me, Techno Destructo, scum dog of the universe. It only allowed me to infiltrate your own ranks. How easy it was for me to gain control of the feeble minds of your already revolting slaves and turn them against you. Well, this night,
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.